and I intend to work with Chairman Barton to move it. We have examined these issues for almost a year now, and it is time for subcommittee and full committee action. In terms of the substance, this staff draft rightly creates a new statutory framework for IP and broadband services that emphasizes a reliance on market forces in the competitive and dynamic sector. And I want to focus right now on one key element of that framework. The staff draft before us attempts to streamline the franchise process for broadband video service providers in order to expedite the entry of a new third competitor into the video marketplace. Such competition, the sooner the better, will be good for consumers. Moreover, the staff draft makes sure that if we are going to depart from the legacy franchise model, that it is for a service which is different than today's cable service. However, in creating a streamlined franchise process for broadband video services, the staff draft attempts to preserve critically important elements of the legacy franchise mechanism, namely, one, a 5% franchise fee, two, pegged carriage requirements, and three, an explicit preservation of local government's police powers related to the orderly and safe use of rights of way, including the time, place, and manner for construction. In addition, the staff draft not only prohibits redlining, but it also preempts state laws which prohibit municipalities from building their own broadband networks and offering their own broadband video services. That way, if a municipality wants to serve any or all of its citizens, it can do so. And I'd ask unanimous consent at this point to place in the record letters from the APPA and the TROPOS networks in support of the municipal broadband provisions in the staff draft. In closing, I want to stress that this is a staff draft and that this public hearing is an opportunity to give members of this subcommittee and the public a chance to debate and learn more about the issues. The next step will be an open public markup at our subcommittee and then full committee, not to mention open and public proceedings on the House floor, to say nothing about the Senate process. Between now and the next step, we have plenty of work ahead of us. We'll continue to work with members on both sides of the aisle and all interested parties through the entire process. And again, I want to just remind my members of the subcommittee that we're going to limit ourselves strictly to the five-minute rule, and I've served a good example by finishing 1 second early. I would recognize the ranking member of the full committee, Mr. Dingell, for an opening statement from the great state of Michigan.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your very kind recognition, and I'm pleased to hear you discuss the staff draft. I'm not sure whether you're indicating greater or lesser enthusiasm for this staff draft than I am. I had understood that we were working closely together, you and Mr. Markey and my good friend, the chairman of the committee. But a funny thing happened on the way to this hearing. And we now find that we have a staff draft. And all the work that had been done by you and I, Mr. Barton and Mr. Markey, appears to have vanished somewhere into a black hole. I find that this is somewhat stressful of the trust that we have on this side, or the feeling that we have that there is a bipartisan effort to achieve a resolution of a problem, which we all agree exists with regard to updating the Telecommunications Act to assist us to have a better law under which we could work. In order to assist you and my good friend the chairman, I will see that our staff furnishes you and others in the industry with both our addresses on this side of the aisle and our telephone numbers, so that you may know how to contact us. And we will also see that we have the different means of electronic communications that we have made available to you and to our friends in the industry, so that you will know how to reach us about matters of this kind. I will also instruct our staff to see to it that your staff has these telephone numbers, because they appear to have forgotten to discuss with us the content of this draft. And although I will observe that parenthetically we were seeking to address these matters in good faith, I will be listening during the course of our future discussions to see whether similar good faith has been exercised on the Republican side of the committee, and whether this indicates to us that we may continue to work in a friendly, harmonious, open, bipartisan fashion with our dear friends on the Republican side. Having said this, many of us have fought for a long time to remove barriers holding back competition in voice, video, and broadband markets. The process leading to this draft legislation started well. In several bipartisan discussions, we found much common ground. Committee staff worked diligently and released bipartisan draft legislation in September. That was not perfect, according to the minds of any participant, but it was progress. It reflected the need to find a meaningful balance between the policy issues and interests at stake. The initial draft received mixed reviews and considerable comment, which we thought we were addressing in a suitable fashion. Yet nearly everyone appreciated the deliberate process and found the draft workable. Staff began working on changes as appropriate. With regard to the initial draft, both the process and the substance were well on their way to what we thought would be a successful legislative achievement. The same cannot be said of this curious staff draft legislation now before us today. In stark contrast to our earlier efforts, this process and this staff draft was not inclusive or bipartisan, and of course the resulting product is at best a fine example of the staff's predilection on these matters. I am extremely displeased at this kind of behavior by the majority, and I observe that it threatens in a very significant way what had been a good working relationship on this matter. Comparing the two versions, it is clear that changes swing consistently, if not universally, in the direction of only one group of affected stakeholders. Most other stakeholders are worse off. Moreover, the draft before us undermines longstanding objectives of fostering localism, competition, and diversity. For each of the changes from the earlier bipartisan staff draft, and there are many, we must ask ourselves, the changes in this staff draft strike the right policy to usher in competition, innovation, an investment that we all seek? And will this staff draft enable us to complete our business before the conclusion of the session? Because goodwill has been somewhat afflicted by the results of these matters. Will the change have collateral effects on other parties? Will the change bring predictability and certainty to the marketplace? Or will it spawn more confusion and litigation? In asking these questions, a number of changes warrant close scrutiny. First, legitimate interests of the cities are not protected. The franchise fee provisions in the draft no longer keep our local governments financially whole. Although the draft retains a 5% fee, it alters revenues on which the fee is paid in a way that could dramatically reduce revenues to our cities and towns, and the rights-of-way provisions place new restrictions on a city's ability to manage its properties. I would note that this was a matter of importance to me and my colleagues on this side, because we felt that preserving the cities and their financial affairs intact was an important part of the resolution of the questions before us. Second, the draft marks a fundamental shift in basic and longstanding video obligations enacted to ensure a competitive marketplace. Requirements that are statutory today, including must carry, retransmission consent, program access, closed capacity, captioning, consumer electronics capability, and compatibility, and retail availability are all relegated under the staff draft to waivable FCC regulations subject to a four-year review that could result in their elimination. Does this committee intend to cede its judgment over television policy to the whims of the FCC, where we have suffered mightily over the years?
Mr. Dingell.
Third.
I tried to make it clear that we're going to try to limit our remarks to 5 minutes, and you've been 2.5 minutes over.
You've been kind.
Very generous.
I hope you realize that my enthusiasm for the...
I just imagine if this had been the real bill.
...will be further emphasized in the balance, but I will commend this reading to the chair.
I look forward to reading every word.
Report it, and I will ask unanimous consent that it be inserted into the record.
Without objection, recognize the chairman of the full committee, Mr. Barton, for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for holding this hearing. I want to make a few extemporary comments in addition to my written statement based on what my good friend Mr. Dingell just said. This staff draft is a staff draft, but it's a staff draft that I and Mr. Upton approved. It's not a staff draft that Mr. Markey and Mr. Dingell approve. That's part of the process. We have worked with Mr. Dingell and Mr. Markey and their staffs for almost a year now. And those have been productive discussions, and there have been the normal give and take. There is a disagreement about this latest draft, about when it was finalized. And Mr. Dingell and I are going to have a meeting on that and some other issues later this afternoon. But I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. As chairman of the full committee and Mr. Upton as chairman of the subcommittee, we want to legislate. We want to legislate in a bipartisan fashion. If you're going to legislate, you've got to make changes in drafts and you've got to hold hearings on them. I made the decision last week that we were going to hold a hearing this week. Mr. Dingell disagreed with that decision, not necessarily because he didn't want to hold the hearing, but because he and his staff had not had time to have input and make some suggestions about revisions to the final draft, and that's the right of him and his staff and Mr. Markey's staff. But you cannot legislate if you don't put it out to the public. Now, the first staff draft that was put out in September, I believe, Mr. Dingell said had mixed reviews. Well, he's being a gentleman about it. It was uniformly knocked. It got nothing but negative reviews. Nobody was for it. That I'm aware of, nobody had talked to me. So we have made some changes. And we're going to make some changes to this draft. That's what this hearing is about. And we're going to continue to work with our friends in the minority. This should be a bipartisan effort, but I don't want anybody to be under any misunderstanding. The Energy and Commerce Committee, as long as I'm chairman, is about action. It's not about inaction. And sometimes we have to set timelines, and it's the chairman of the committee that makes those timeline decisions. So I bear total responsibility, and I told Mr. Dingell last week, I said, I don't want you to take any ownership of this. If you don't want to, you can call it just what he just did. And he's got every right to do that. So I just wanted to set the record straight about that. Now, in my last 2 minutes and 23 seconds, I do want to thank you, Mr. Upton, for holding this hearing. We've had four hearings at your subcommittee on the Internet protocol technology this year. We've heard from dozens of witnesses. We're going to hear from several more today. They've talked to us about the effects of new technology on voice, video, and data markets, and they claim, and I believe that they're correct, that there is a need for a new, clear statutory framework to govern the delivery of such services. Our nation's telephone laws, as they're currently structured, are based on the principles of common carriage and the belief that only incumbents can truly own the facilities that connect Americans. On the other hand, the nation behind America's cable law is that competition doesn't exist, and since no competitive forces check the action of a monopoly distributor of multi-channel programming in many markets, that responsibility falls to the government. That's why we're here today. The advance of technology has left the law behind. The statute no longer reflects the technological and competitive reality. Congress has a responsibility to update our communications laws. This is one of the committee's highest priorities. Most of the folks out in the private sector that are governed by these laws are ready to go to work. If we do the new law right, there's going to be an explosion of jobs, growth, and opportunity for American workers and American consumers. We'll get a wide array of new services that were unimagined just a few years ago. As we move forward in this process, I sincerely look forward to working with all members of the subcommittee and full committee on both sides of the aisle, especially my good friends Mr. Upton, Mr. Dingell, and Mr. Markey, to try to perfect this draft. We do want to be bipartisan, and we do want to move a bill. At one time, I'd hoped we could move a bill before full committee this year. I'm not sure that that's going to be possible now. But we can at least hold this hearing, take more comments, hopefully release another draft, and then maybe move to a legislative markup in subcommittee. Depending if we're here in December, we might actually get a markup in this subcommittee this calendar year. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm 4 seconds over, and I yield back.
Noted the 4 seconds. Recognize the member of the subcommittee, Mr. Martin, for 5 minutes for an opening statement.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. On September 15th, after 8 months of negotiations on the part of the staff of Chairman Barton, Ranking Member Mr. Dingell, Chairman Upton, Mr. Pickering, and myself, a bipartisan consensus staff draft was released. That draft, while not perfect, was balanced and designed to treat all parties equitably, meaning from the perspective of all parties, unfairly. It was offered as a starting point from which we could reflect on suggested changes from all affected parties and refine the draft through discussion and continued bipartisan collaboration. I want to thank Chairman Barton and Mr. Upton for the process over those months, which led to that bipartisan consensus staff draft. I am dismayed by the process, however, over the last several days that has led to this hearing and to the latest staff draft, which is neither consensus nor bipartisan. While I understand that some may see the unveiling of the new Barton-Upton draft as moving the process forward, I think it is quite the opposite. On both the overall substance and the process, the Barton-Upton draft represents a significant step backward and, in my view, brings us further away from successfully legislating in this area, not closer. The new staff draft eliminates a provision that extended the prohibition on cable operators and telephone companies buying each other out in region. This has been the foundation of competition in this committee for many years. The cable industry challenges the phone industry, and the phone industry challenges the cable industry. It is a vital engine of progress for which this committee has been justifiably proud. While many of us may lament the prospect of a broadband duopoly in many communities, at least it is a duopoly. Deleting the provision which ensures competition between the cable and telephone industries is a terrible policy decision. The Barton-Upton draft also reduces the consumer protections required for national standards by the FCC from 11 areas to 4 areas. And it also adjusts the fundamental definitions in the bill. For instance, the bits definition is challenged in a way which raises questions as to whether resellers or aggregators of broadband service have any rights or any obligations to abide by network neutrality principles, consumer privacy protections, or consumer protection rules generally. The broadband video service definition is changed in a way that makes the platform which delivers the service a potential vehicle for discrimination. The Internet is a wonderfully chaotic, open, worldwide network, a platform for innovation and an economic engine for the country. I don't understand why we would tinker with a model that has been so wildly successful and embraced by thousands of companies and millions of individuals in order to slant public policy in favor of three companies, simply so that they can deliver movies to people's homes. My own Private Idaho was a movie. It is not supposed to be an articulation of America's broadband policy. The button-upton draft also changes the basis for calculating franchise fees for municipalities, a shift which will have negative financial consequences for communities across the country and that undercuts financial support for public access television channels. In addition, the Barton-Upton draft deleted the placeholder that had been in the consensus draft that would have addressed the question of the extent and timeliness of the telephone companies offering broadband video service to both rural and underserved urban and suburban communities. The Barton-Upton draft also departs in a major way from the consensus draft by changing the obligations of Bell Company Video Services from statutory responsibilities to mere regulations. In other words, the rules governing must carry, sports blackouts, closed captioning, indecency rules, television content ratings, ownership limits, consumer equipment compatibility, equal employment opportunity rules, program access, closed captioning, and others can now be waived by the commission upon request by the Bell companies. If that were not sufficient to tilt the playing field enough, the draft adds an additional provision requiring the Federal Communications Commission every 4 years to eliminate such any of the rules which it finds in its subjective judgment that affects meaningful economic competition. I am willing, as I have been throughout the year, to negotiate in good faith and to develop a consensus piece of legislation. I am dismayed that the promising path that the five-member offices were on towards that goal has been abandoned in the last week for what I see as a detour towards a likely legislative dead end. I thank the chairman for calling today's hearing, and I look forward to hearing from the witnesses.
I don't know if I should say thank you or not. Mr. Whitfield, recognized for 3 minutes for an opening statement.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and I don't think any of us are surprised that you and Chairman Barton have come forth with a new draft because, as Chairman Barton accurately stated, there was not anyone that appeared to be enthusiastic about the last draft. I actually am encouraged by this draft before the committee today because many of the provisions set forth offer important guiding principles toward improving our telecommunication laws in an era where we are witnessing the convergence of voice, video, and data services on a single platform. Most importantly, the draft creates federal standards for the deployment of broadband services, and I believe that elevating this issue from the local level to the federal level accurately reflects the fact of the deployment of broadband services is a national priority. Without a doubt, consumers will benefit from these advanced services, and the draft before us today creates the necessary market incentives to make this deployment happen. And frankly, Mr. Chairman, I believe these changes are overdue. As we have witnessed time and time again, vibrant competition in the communications marketplace will bring much-needed technological innovation and growth to our country, stimulating our economy and creating jobs. At the same time, consumers stand to reap tremendous rewards, I believe. It is competition and not excessive regulation or excessive mandates from the government that will stimulate lower prices, faster services, and expanded deployment. Although this draft, I think, it's quite obvious, has not yet attained broad bipartisan agreement among the members of this committee, I do look forward to working with you and others on the subcommittee and the full committee to update our federal communication laws for the Internet age. And I'm optimistic that this committee can do so and will not satisfy all the special interest groups, but will certainly take into account all of their views and come out with a balanced final product.
Thank you. Mr. Boucher.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The draft which is before the subcommittee is a generally well-balanced proposal, and I think it is a useful starting point for this subcommittee's work. It requires a regulatory light touch for Internet applications, much along the line that was recommended by the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Stearns, and by me, in a bill that we previously introduced. The draft before us establishes a clear right for municipalities to offer telecommunication services. Broadband facilities will define the arteries of commerce in this century, much as canals, railroads, and highways were the pathways for the economy of earlier eras. For many smaller communities, the municipal provider of broadband may be the only provider, or it may be a critical second provider assuring that services are affordable. In larger communities, low-cost Wi-Fi-based mesh networks can assure the wide availability of wireless high-speed Internet access when deployed by local governments. The draft assures that localities can offer these services as long as they abide by the same rules that they impose on private sector providers. I think it's essential that we provide franchising relief for multi-channel video providers if we're serious about welcoming competition by the telephone companies in this market. The draft provides that relief while assuring that all providers pay local franchise fees and offer peg channels. While I think the draft broadly strikes the right balance regarding municipal networks, the scope of permissible regulation of Internet applications and video franchising, I have concerns about the way the draft addresses network neutrality. This provision needs additional work. Following the Brand X decision and an FCC rulemaking, it is now clear that broadband platform providers need not accommodate unaffiliated Internet access providers. In the absence of that open access for unaffiliated ISPs, the need for a firm network neutrality provision is all the more apparent. It will be our only assurance that the Internet remains open and seamless as we expect it to be, and as the full utilization of that medium requires that it be. In simple terms, network neutrality will assure that any Internet user will be able to reach any website of his choosing and be able fully to enjoy the services that are offered by that website without interference by the broadband platform provider. The platform operator should not be permitted to manage the network in a manner that favors his content and services to the disadvantage of the unaffiliated content provider who is Internet-based. The draft contains ambiguous language that permits the platform operator to offer enhanced quality of service to subscribers and to impose capacity limitation on subscribers. While I acknowledge the need for broadband providers who make substantial investments in building networks to be able to offer a high-quality service through their video, their VoIP, and their other offerings, the language should be modified to assure that the platform operator cannot interfere with the delivery of services from unaffiliated Internet websites, and that sufficient bandwidth will be available on the platform to accommodate the unaffiliated services. Mr. Chairman, I look forward to working with you and with the members of the subcommittee and with interested external parties as we seek to achieve that goal. Thank you, and I yield back.
Mr. Gilmore.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for holding this hearing. And I want to applaud your hard work and your leadership and Chairman Barton's in developing this revised draft bill. And I also appreciate all the panelists being here.
Mr. Chairman, we were both members of this subcommittee when Congress last updated the telecommunications law, and at that time, the Internet was in its infancy, and cell phones were the size of masonry bricks, and BlackBerry was only recognized as a fruit. None of us could have imagined the technical advances that have taken place since the Telecom Act of 1996 was signed into law. Advancements such as voice over Internet protocol, on-demand media services, wireless web access to even the most rural of areas have Americans becoming increasingly dependent on the technology of the present, as they will become even more so on the technology of the future. And I'm pleased to see that there have been so many positive, so many bipartisan, forward-thinking provisions within this second discussion draft that attempt to address many of our future needs. As we begin the process of updating our current laws, I think we need to listen to the message that history left us. Burdensome government-imposed regulation smothers the development of emerging technologies and limits long-term investment in this sector of our economies. The areas that are being addressed in the staff draft have become prominent largely due to government inaction. Recognizing that technological advancements are the driving force behind the future health of our nation's economy, it's vital that we also recognize our constitutional oversight authority to make certain that this segment of our economy continues to grow. I think, as you do, that we ought not rush this process, but we ought to be sure that we listen to all the stakeholders, including our constituents, the American consumers, to ensure that we do our best to address the needs of this very fluid industry and to foster the spirit of competition. So I look forward to what emerges from these hearings, and Mr. Chairman, I again want to commend you for your determination to assure that America continues to be the bellwether of technological advancement throughout the global marketplace. And I yield back all 16 seconds.
Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've tried to approach these issues that come before this subcommittee with the goal of creating telecommunication policies that will lead to increased competition within industries and more benefit for consumers. IP technology has the potential to do just that in no time at all. This technology will change every aspect of competition within the telecommunications industry, and it is our job to see that as the state of competition evolves, we have policies in place that do not unfairly tilt the playing field in one direction or the other. Vibrant competition benefits us all because it benefits our constituents. I've said before that most of my constituents are probably more concerned about finding a way to get the same voice, video, and data services they currently get, only at a cheaper rate. However, the promise of IP technology is undeniable. We will see new services like video and voice over IP that look, feel, and act similar to old services like cable and satellite television and traditional phone service. The question is, should we pass laws that treat the providers of these new services more favorably than we treat existing providers, simply to encourage entry into the marketplace? Or, if regulatory obligations are reduced for a new entrant, should we then go back and reduce these obligations on existing providers? And if we do either of those things, what will be the effect on consumers? I look forward to hearing from our witnesses on this subject because I'm reluctant to create winners and losers in this area simply based upon the way services are delivered to consumers. I also want to highlight one issue that's very important to me as a member of Congress who has 54 separate political subdivisions in my district, and that is the issue of franchise agreements. Franchise fees have been an important revenue source for municipal budgets since the beginning of cable television. and I know that some of our witnesses feel that the pace of negotiating franchise agreements can affect your ability to vigorously compete in the marketplace. However, the system we have in place today ensures that local voices are heard and that communities are compensated for the use of public right-of-ways. If the franchise process is streamlined, who will my city council members have to call if a problem arises with a provider? And will there be anyone there to answer that call and give it the attention it deserves? I've also heard that in addition to streamlining the franchise process, this discussion draft could drastically reduce the amount of money franchise fees generate for municipalities. A narrow definition of gross revenue that only includes money collected from subscriber fees and does not include other generally accepted forms of revenue, such as advertising fees, will cost Pennsylvania municipalities millions of dollars. This would be a devastating blow to my district at a time when all of these political subdivisions are being forced to cut or reduce municipal services. In closing, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank our witnesses for agreeing to appear today. I look forward to hearing to what they have to say, and I yield back my time.
Mr. Terry. Mr. Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As this country migrates towards a completely digital communication system, I think it's important that we provide consumers and communications providers with legal and regulatory certainty to continue to offer new and innovative services. This discussion draft takes an important step toward that goal. Specifically, I commend you, Mr. Chairman, for your focus on the voice over IP technology and internet telephone providers. VoIP technology allows any broadband internet connection to be a virtual telephone that provides consumers with affordable and innovative voice services. I know firsthand of the benefits of this technology for our economy as VoIP providers like Vonage, which has created over 1,600 jobs in my state of New Jersey. They offer VoIP services as an affordable alternative to traditional wireline telephone service. Also of utmost importance is a competitive environment for consumers, an environment that provides them with the most options for their dollar and ensures that these new services are both affordable and attainable. To reach this goal, we need to establish a framework that ensures a level competitive playing field for all industries that provide these exciting new offerings. By doing so, we will ensure that the consumer market gravitates to consumer demands and at the same time enables the development of sustainable and genuine competition for all of our constituents. I look forward to hearing from the witnesses present here today as to how we can achieve these goals as we move forward. And again, I commend Chairman Upton, Chairman Barton, and others who have worked on this important next step in the process. And I yield back.
Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to be brief, maybe not use, well, I've got 2 minutes, so I'll hurry then. But I'll be a mind reader today, and I believe that I can read the minds of all the witnesses and everybody out there in the audience, and that is, how do you stay out of the line of fire of what's going on up here regarding process? But please understand how important it is. Please put it in context of where we're coming from on this particular issue of process. First of all, process will always determine the end product. We know that. So it is important that the minority be part of the process. Majority does the majority's will and does rule at the end of the day because they are the majority. But it does so by respecting the rights of the minority for good reason. And hopefully that's what will happen here. Also understand that this particular staff draft and its consideration and the hearing today comes on the heels of a couple of other measures that were considered here, and that was the Energy Bill number 2, and of course the digital TV and Medicaid legislation, which of course we believe was foisted upon the members of the minority side without much input, and even during the process we weren't really truly included in any significant measure. I don't believe that it is too late. We're still in the process, and we'll jump into the middle of it, even if it's at a later stage. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Shimkus.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you for holding the hearing today, and I want to thank you and Chairman Barton and your staff for the hard work that has gone into producing this draft. As you know, my colleague, Representative Wynn, and I introduced the Video Choice Act to streamline the process new entrants must undergo to offer video service. We believe that cutting red tape will not only lead to more choices for consumers, but will greatly increase broadband deployment in the country. It is my hope this draft, a subsequent bill, and an updated law will provide the needed relief for all new entrants. Since the U.S. has fallen to 16th in broadband deployment, the time to act is now. Today, if the local telephone company wants to string fiber to the home of every single constituent in my district and provide high-speed internet access and voice telephone service, the company does not need to obtain any additional authority from the local government. However, under current law in most states, if that company later decides it wants to provide video over the same lines, it now has to go through local video franchising process in each and every locality. The process will take years. It'll cost millions. In my opinion, it is a process that is counterproductive to achieving U.S. superiority in broadband deployment, access, and usage. In today's competitive communications world, the local franchising rules are out of place. The Texas legislature got rid of them, and now phone companies are investing more in Texas, creating more jobs and more competition. Congress should do the same. Under the committee draft, the localities are indeed made whole by retaining franchise fees and peg channels. Consumers will benefit from having faster enhanced internet access, competitive video service, more choice at lower cost. Local governments will have more revenue. It is the right policy, and we should move quickly to make sure that franchise reform is adopted during this Congress. I look forward to hearing from our panelists.
Mr. Inslee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, while we're having this convergence in the industry in telecommunications, we'd like to see some convergence in the Republican and the Democratic parties. And I think that's very important in telecommunications policy for the long run. And that's why, although I'm dismayed at the moment, I'm hopeful that that will continue, because I think it is very important that this industry and the tremendous creative abilities it represents are not disadvantaged ultimately by some partisan divide. So I hope this discussion continues. I want to make a couple comments about this draft. It's encouraging, I think, that there's some streamlining of the video franchise process. Competition in that marketplace, I believe, will benefit consumers. It's my hope that this market will drive a more robust broadband deployment. With that, though, I urge my colleagues to seek a franchise policy that really does keep local governments whole and maintains local government control of the rights away. A second, one of the most important and positive aspects of this draft, I believe, is the provision seeking to maintain America's internet freedoms. Section 104, which is called the network neutrality or the net neutrality requirement, will help to assure that Americans have unfettered access to the greatest possible choice of legal internet content and services, and can connect any unharmful device of their choice to the broadband network. This connectivity principle enshrined in this provision is good, but they must be further strengthened to give Americans an airtight guarantee to internet freedom. Internet access through a broadband video service is still internet access, so it should also adhere to these internet freedom requirements. A third, I have concerns that much of the broadband regulations imposed in internet services may unnecessarily capture services that do not need to be regulated. We should not regulate internet services such as Google, Yahoo, Amazon, or MSN. These heretofore unregulated services, such as free email, have made use of the internet, but have not made the actual connection to the consumer. On both, we should be careful not to regulate any service that is not a substitute for capabilities to send and receive voice communications. With that, I look forward to restoring the bipartisan tradition in this industry. Thank you.
Mr. Sullivan. You need to hit the button.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
it's been a long, this, I think for holding this hearing, it's been a long time coming. The internet has revolutionized our lives. It has had a dramatic impact on the way we communicate, and our laws must reflect those changes. Services based on internet protocol are the wave of the future, and we can't bury our heads in the sand. We must address the public policy concerns this technology raises within the telecommunications industry. The regulatory and technological world we face today is not what we faced 10 or 15 years ago, and that's a simple fact. I'm pleased that this draft addresses consumer protection standards and ensures access to customers regardless of income. Also, PEG requirements in this draft are comparable to current service providers, and the draft continues the current management of right-of-way. This is critical for our communities to have control over their operations, and it has appropriately been addressed in the language before us. The ability for IP to enable so many diverse technologies is a huge benefit for my constituents and all Americans. Competition, fair competition drives innovation by driving down prices and increasing choices for consumers. Any barriers that impede competition should be eliminated. The fact of the matter is these technologies will affect us all. You, me, all of my constituents, everyone will benefit. The free market works if we'll let it. I look forward to the testimony and I yield back.
Mr. Gordon.
I'm ready to listen to the witnesses, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Collins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, to provide us an opportunity to get some additional information. As we stand on the verge of realizing the competition we had all envisioned in 1996, I'm anxious for everyone to benefit from current and future technological innovations. It's great to see the technology community spurring the competition that the market needs, and we should strive for a regulatory framework that encourages it. By having multiple entrants into the video services market, customers will have more benefits, positive investment in networks will be encouraged, and more jobs will be created. I'm eager to see a widespread deployment of the technologies we have been discussing over the past year. The services and devices that have been shown to be are incredible. And their availability to everyone in every community is vital. I'm confident that our industry friends recognize this and will govern themselves accordingly. My constituents are excited about the communication technologies that exist today and want to see more innovation, more choice, and, of course, lower prices in the future. I'm pleased that the cable companies are aggressively competing against the Bells for telephone products, and the companies like Verizon, SBC, have plans to compete against the cable for video services. But for this innovation to occur, Congress needs to set the rules of the road. And we need to get it right the first time to prevent accidents. I hope we can advance this issue properly and, more importantly, in a bipartisan manner, Mr. Chairman. Let's keep in mind, we should not create a regulatory burden that stops technology from initially reaching our constituents. But we must create a playing field that is level. We don't want winners and losers. So on that note, Mr. Chairman, I yield back, and I'm anxious and eager to hear from the witnesses.
Mr. Bass, Mr. Stearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank you for holding this hearing. It looks like you have a full house here, and I notice they're outside standing in the hallway. This is reminiscent of the Telecom Act of 1996. And I suspect after your first draft in September, you got everybody's notice, and now with the second draft, there seems to be even more concern. But I want to compliment you because myself and the staff had some concerns about the first draft, and there are significant changes we felt and we helped bring about. And so I want to thank you for some of those changes. I think in the end, what most of the people in the audience are concerned about is regulatory certainty and legal certainty. And that any business would appreciate, because they can't invest the capital unless they're pretty sure that they have this certainty. And so it's important that we continue to have these hearings, and I compliment you on having all these panels, because a lot of members won't be here. I say to the audience, we'll be listening to them in our offices because of the importance of this bill. For the past couple of years, my colleague, Mr. Boucher, and I have been working on getting new treatment for IP-enabled services and TV, and to a certain extent, we think we can accomplish these goals. I think to a larger degree, the staff draft takes a significant step, as I said earlier, in this direction, but obviously I think we can still make improvements. I think my colleague, I agree with him when he contends that the net neutrality standards in this draft should be strengthened. This is important to all of us. But again, without this certainty and without this regulatory certainty and this legal certainty, we as members of Congress will not give the industry the ability to innovate. And I've often said, Mr. Chairman, with high-definition television, third-generation wireless and broadband, that this economy will be transformed into a whole new economy, and the GDP will go forward at quantum jumps, and that we'll have a higher standard of living for all Americans. And this bill, and what you're doing today, Mr. Chairman, is going to do that. So in a larger extent, this hearing today with all these panels, witnesses, is really creating a higher standard of living for all of Americans and creating more jobs, higher paying jobs, and ultimately making this country more competitive. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we've got a platoon of witnesses before the committee today, and I just want to reiterate and state and cut it without any unclarity that my position is that every crook and cranny of this nation should have access to the Internet services. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll pass on my statement, on my official statement.
Mr. Pickering.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank the panelists and everyone that has been working on the two drafts. Let me say to my friends on the other side, there are many issues on the committee where we are simply not going to agree, and we'll have philosophical and partisan differences. But the history of this committee has been on telecom that we've been able to work things out in a bipartisan way. Whether it's energy or environment or health care, those are areas that perhaps we have irreconcilable differences. But on this particular area, telecom, where we've had some great accomplishments, I still believe that we can and should work in a bipartisan basis. For 7.5 months, staffs worked on the first draft. And sometimes when you work in that way and you try to do it as a member-led process versus an industry-led process, the first reaction from industry is that no one likes it. Now, you could say that is a good and fair thing, or you could say maybe we got it wrong. What we hope is in these hearings is to learn the differences between the first two drafts, use this draft and the first draft as a catalyst to reach consensus. I do hope, Mr. Chairman, that we reestablish and reengage in the bipartisan process of working together to find the common ground as we go forward. Let me set forward the principles that I hope that our process and our work will lead us to. It should be driven to establish clear preemption policy, clean entry policy, competition not just for one sector of communications, but competition to expand and thrive in each sector of communications, and that we find a way to do that in a competitively neutral and a technologically neutral way. I do think that we can find that common ground. I think the bill makes improvements as we look at telco entry into cable, into video. And in that market, that will expand competition. At the same time, I have concerns that if we do not have a clear interconnection standard or interoperability standard, that we will not have the corresponding ability to maintain competitive markets in voice and in data. It is very important that as we look at the engines of innovation and investment and competition, the Internet providers, whether they're content or whether they're voice, that we make sure that they're not subject to tolls or fees of Internet freedom, and that they still can provide competition both to video and telcos. At the end of this day, we want to say we have deregulated, we have set a cleaner policy, a clearer policy, but we have increased competition, and by increasing competition, you will increase investment and innovation in each sector. Those are the goals and the principles that I will be going by, and I think that this committee, whether it is energy or health care or whatever we have tried to do, the chairman has tried to take a principle approach of increasing competition wherever we make policy. And I think that if we do that, we will come out ahead for the American people and for this committee. And we should not simply try to please one sector while leaving out every other sectors. So that is the guidepost that I will be using, and I look forward to working with the chairman and the rest of the committee with that bipartisan process and with those principles. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stubeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This subcommittee has and will continue to have disagreements about policy issues, but we've largely kept partisan politics out of the subcommittee. It's a tradition we can be proud of, and I look forward to working with my colleagues on this draft as the process moves forward. I've learned from our subcommittee hearings as well as my many rural caucus forums that we have a delicate job ahead of us. We must draft legislation in a way that doesn't overly burden our brightest innovators with laws that can't possibly change as fast as they innovate, but at the same time respects the importance of cities and states, consumer protection laws, and social obligations, including the Universal Service Fund, on which our communications law has been built. In addition, we won't have done our job if any rewrite doesn't recognize the special needs and challenges of rural communities and communication providers who serve those communities. Broadband is critical for our children, our hospital, our public safety officers, and our businesses to thrive in the 21st century. Our rural communities understand this as much as anyone. But while the commitment to rural communication providers and community leaders is unlimited, their resources are not. Congress has a duty to match rural America's commitment. It's clear that we must do better. Despite advances in new technologies to help bridge the digital divide, broadband is still vastly underdeployed in rural America. The Communications Act of 1996 did a lot of great things. It spurred competition and brought us to where we are here today. Cable, phone, wireless, competing, and offering better services. The 1996 Act also expanded the Universal Service Fund to bring broadband to community hospitals, schools, libraries, and it's time we take a narrow look at the fund. USF faces challenges from a growing demands on the fund and a shrinking pool of contributors. We have to meet those challenges head on. While the staff draft directs the FCC to study expanding the contribution base to include VoIP providers, I believe the language could be stronger to reflect the importance of the fund for rural America. I believe this draft is a good first step, but we need to be careful not to let the process get ahead of policy. That's why I look forward to hearing from our witnesses today and in the coming weeks about how we can refine the draft to better meet the needs of consumers, set out fair and clear rules, and promote competition. I look forward to working with the chairman and ranking member Dingell and my colleagues on the committee to make sure that all communities, large and small, urban and rural, are connected to the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll yield back.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. think it's pretty clear that we are on the cusp of returning to a duopoly in wireline service, which makes any revisions that we undertake in the Telecom Act particularly important. And I think we need to very carefully think about the direction we're going on. The draft that we now have is a significant departure from the one that we saw earlier in the year. And that concerns me, particularly as the one we saw earlier in the year, I think, was a bipartisan draft. And it concerns me if we move forward too quickly based on this current draft piece of legislation and the imminent approval of the mergers of four large telecommunication companies into two huge telecommunication companies for wireline. I always come at these problems and these issues from the perspective of consumers. And consumers have benefited tremendously from competition in telecommunications. And we need to make sure that competition continues to be what drives innovation and low prices. And anything we do in the Telecom Act has to have that first and foremost. And I yield the balance of my time.
Mr. Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'm going to defer my opening statement, but I would like to take a moment to recognize one of the outstanding local officials from my district, the only woman on the panel before us today, the Honorable Marilyn Prasner. She is here wearing many hats. She is speaking on behalf of the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors, the National League of Cities, the United States Conference of Mayors, and the National Association of Counties, and Telecommunity. And I think that reflects the fact that she's exercised over the years a great deal of leadership nationally as well as locally on telecommunications issues. I've had conversations with her about aspects of this bill, and they've been very productive conversations. I know she is concerned about protecting the interests of local governments, particularly their revenues, their management of rights of ways, and protecting consumers' interests, and I'm sure she will share those views with the committee, and we will be better for it. But I just wanted to say we are in the presence of an outstanding American local leader, Honorable Marilyn Prasner. Thank you for joining us today, Ms. Prasner.
Gentleman, yield back, Stan.
Chairman?
Mr. Booten, gentleman from Indiana.
I'd ask unanimous consent for me to participate in this hearing, to ask questions of the witnesses, to give an opening statement.
Any member have an objection? Hearing none, the gentleman is recognized for an opening statement for 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, not only for your work, but also that of the ranking member and their staff. I agree with my colleague, Mr. Towns, when he's talked about getting it right. And I would say to my friend, Ms. Wilson, part of the problem we have, I don't even call it a problem, part of the concern that you may have about you see major industries coming together, we caused that. Because we overregulated on voice, we deregulated on video. The deregulation on video spurred innovation and competition. There's an explosion based on convergence technologies. And consumers are beginning to benefit. At the same time, you've got this overregulation that Congress put place on voice, and it's created great pains. And these companies are going to survive, and they're going to try to be innovative themselves. So as we move forward, I agree with my friend Mr. Pickering when he laid out some of his themes or principles, because I have mine too. And that is to respect the free markets. You do that to ensure the forum is open, fair, and competitive. Number two, we need to deregulate for economic security. And that means that the pathway is to foster innovation and competition. Number three, I agree with the themes that are being used out there in industry and around the Hill. And that is to if you must regulate, then do so on service, not on technology. And that's the error that we made back in the first Telecom Act. And I also agree with the theme about regulating on parity. Also about the empowerment of consumers to ensure that there's choice. And, in fact, making sure that we have a good balance between our federal and state jurisdictions on consumer protection. And how are we going to increase the access, and who will all participate in the USF? Last I would mention is with regard to franchise fees. These franchise fees should not be an entry barrier to the marketplace. At the same time, I would think that cable would love to end what is happening out there in all these little towns and cities all across America, whereby you enter the renegotiations and, oh, by the way, we need you to do this. You know, we need some upgrades at the park. Can you help us with this and that? And they slip you the lists. If that isn't as close to blackmail the marketplace, I've never seen it. So I'm sure that you would love to end that out there. And, you know, I am intrigued, and I like what Florida has done. I mean, Florida has an entertainment tax. We call it a fee. But if you just go to a straight fee on entertainment, let everybody openly compete, it has some attractive features to it. So let me be circuitous, and I'll end where I opened, and that was with Mr. Townsend's comments on getting it right. I want to thank all the witnesses for being here. I want to thank the committee staff. On the other side of Ms. Wilson, I was concerned about the first draft. So I think the second draft is a much more improvement than the first draft, but we still have a way to go, and I appreciate your being here, and let's keep it going. Yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Boyer. At this point, we're ready for our opening statements. Hooray. We are welcomed by Mr. Jim Ellis, Senior Executive VP and General Counsel of SBC, Mr. Tim Krause, Chief Marketing Officer and Senior VP of Government Relations for Alcatel, North America, Mr. Paul Mitchell, Senior Director, General Manager, Microsoft, the Honorable Marilyn Praisner, Member of the Montgomery County Council in Montgomery County, Maryland, Mr. Christopher Petula, Executive VP, Public Policy for Earthlink, Mr. Wayne Rayberger, CEO of Axel Communications, Mr. Edward Salas, Network Planning for Verizon Wireless, Mr. Michael Wilner, President and CEO of Insight Communications, New York, Mr. James Yeager, CEO of Barrington Broadcasting Company, on behalf of the National Association of Broadcasters, welcome you back as well. Ladies and gentlemen, we're prepared for your opening statements. I very much appreciated the opportunity to peruse them last night for a lengthy period of time, so thank you for getting them to us in advance. We will try to adhere to the five-minute rule to our ability. I would note we're expecting votes about quarter of 12, so we'll go as far as we can. Mr. Ellis, we'll start with you. Your statements are made part of the record in their entirety, so go ahead, Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Chairman Barton, Chairman Upton, Congressman Dingell, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity for SBC to present its views on the staff draft. Today, competition and innovation have unquestionably changed the way we communicate, the way we use the Internet, in fact, even the way we watch television. It's happening in a continual pace, and it reflects the marketplace conditions that exist today. But despite these great strides, much of our industry remains subject to a shifting regulatory environment that inevitably is going to threaten some of this progress in various ways. That's why we support the staff draft. We believe it puts in place a more predictable national framework that will be important to the next generation services and networks. The staff draft reflects an important fact, a reality, and that is that what's important in the future is less, not more, regulation. We have any number of examples from our industry that make that very clear. If you look at wireless, that's an opportunity where there was no pervasive regulation. The result has been an absolute flourishing of opportunity and new services in the wireless business. We've gone from 30 million subscribers just 10 years ago to over 200 wireless subscribers in this country. There are more wireless phones today than there are wired phones. Rates have gone from 50, 60 cents a minute not many years ago to pennies today. The same thing has happened with respect to the broadband market. didn't exist a few years ago, but we've seen it flourish with very light regulation, both by the states and at the federal level. Today, broadband services are roughly 40 million subscribers have broadband services, and the rates reflect a decrease from $40, $50 not many years ago to less than $20 today by SBC and a number of providers. Voice over the Internet services, VoIP, same thing. Minimal regulation. The service is flourishing. One incumbent that hasn't been around very long has a million customers. Some say Skype is adding 100,000 a day around the world. That's the reality of the marketplace. Even with respect to traditional telephone services, where the regulations encourage entry without legacy, burdening the new entrants with legacy regulations, had a dramatic impact. We've seen that in long distance. In 1984, $20 got you 50 minutes of long distance. Today, that same $20 will get you unlimited long distance. Same thing with respect to the whole package of local, long distance, and vertical services. In the last 5 years, those rates have gone down 30-40% when you include the bundling discounts. The one area where we have not seen competition be in any way effective, it's been impervious to competition, is the video services market. It's been 20 years since we had the Cable Act. In that 20 years, there has not been a single movement to have effective, transformative competition in the video services market. Since 1995, video cable rates have increased by 80% since 1995. In the last 5 years, they've gone up 40%. That's three times the consumer price index. And unfortunately, the trend continues. In 2005, there have been more increases. This is why this legislation is important. The legislation as proposed, and I'd also say it's also reflected in the Blackburn Wynn and in the Boucher-Stearns bill, it all reflects that reality of marketplace experience and the importance of seeing to ease of entry of new competitors and without the burden of legacy regulation. SBC today is in the process of adding to its broadband network. We're going to spend $5 billion over the next 3 years to expand our broadband capability. We're going to do so to offer a number of applications, but in particular, we will compete with the entrenched cable TV operators in our territory. The legislation is important to encourage that. We particularly think it's important in that it provides our right to enter that market on precisely the same set of rules that cable had when they came into telephony, namely without the burden of the legacy regulations. We thank the committee staff, the members for their work on this important piece of legislation. We hope you act promptly on the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Krause.
Chairman Upton, Ranking Member Markey, and members of the subcommittee, thanks for the opportunity to appear here today regarding the BITS Act. Alcatel endorses this legislation and requests the committee move it forward in the legislative process without delay. Alcatel is also a member of the Telecommunications Industry Association, and Alcatel believes the bill is consistent with the TIA's convergence and broadband deployment policies. While Alcatel is a global company with 56,000 employees in 130 countries, it actually has almost 9,000 employees here in North America and has made over $17 billion in technology investments here. The North American market is vital to Alcatel and the entire technology industry because it is here that consumers are most demanding, and as a result, this market leads the world in innovation. That is why Alcatel's global R&D centers for IP routing and enterprise applications are based in California, and our global R&D center for fiber to the home technologies are based in North Carolina. Alcatel is the leader in broadband access technologies with over 70 million digital subscriber lines shipped to service providers. Alcatel has been selected by SBC as its primary network infrastructure and video integration supplier for Project Lightspeed. It's also involved with numerous other telecommunications companies in the U.S. and around the world who are at various stages in their own plans to deploy broadband video services. The new broadband networks Alcatel will build for these companies are not mere conjecture. They're a reality. We've all read the statistics. The U.S. is not the world leader in broadband deployment, either in terms of penetration or bandwidth. We think by creating a legal framework for the continued emergence of IP-enabled services going forward, we have the chance to position this nation to leapfrog international competition, creating, in fact, an export market for our innovation in the form of products and services. The BITS Act will help make this possible in several ways. First, it generally protects nascent broadband services of all kinds, voice, video, data, from regulation at the federal, state, and local level. Second, the bill extends these protections to specific services such as VoIP and broadband video services in a socially conscious manner. The legislation preserves important public policies such as protecting consumers' privacy, guaranteeing E911 access, and maintaining video programming safeguards. The bill creates a streamlined federal video franchise process for broadband video services that will ensure they can be a key driver of continued broadband deployment immediately. The BITS Act achieves this goal while protecting the ability of municipalities to manage their local rights of way, as well as the video franchise fee revenue streams they have come to rely on. The new broadband networks Alcatel is building are unique in the U.S. market. These networks will enable two-way video services that allow for unprecedented subscriber interactivity, including robust parental controls for kid-friendly services, increased ethnic content, and other personalized applications not possible over existing video services. Those who ask whether broadband video services, as defined in this legislation, being deployed by companies like SBC and others, are truly distinct from cable TV, I ask you to recognize the answer is yes. MSOs are preparing to invest billions of dollars into their own networks in an effort to compete. If telecommunications carriers were simply rolling out cable TV, there would be no need for such an investment by the cable operators. It's this very type of facilities-based broadband competition that benefits consumers in both quality of service and in pricing. The BITS Act also includes important internet neutrality principles. Alcatel fully supports their inclusion into this legislation as an important component of broadband consumer demand. Finally, I would like to take a moment to commend the bill's office for being sure to protect the rights of municipalities to enter the broadband market when they determine such action is in the best interest of their local communities. As Congressman Boucher knows, Alcatel was the main vendor to Municipal Fiber to the Home Build in Bristol, Virginia, and we continue to work with municipalities in an effort to help them achieve their broadband potential where needed. Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Markey, members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to appear here today. I look forward to discussing the issues and answering any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell.
Chairman Upton and Ranking Member Mr. Markey and members of the subcommittee, I'm very pleased today to testify on this far-reaching legislation. When I testified before the subcommittee earlier this year, I focused on how Internet technologies are transforming the consumer experience, especially in the area of broadband platforms delivering video and other advanced services. This hearing is important because it takes us from the big picture to the critically important details. How will the legislation encourage all players in the Internet world, network operators and content providers alike, to deliver advanced Internet content and services to consumers? In this area, I have two overarching observations. First, we are concerned that the definitions in the discussion draft could extend regulation to Internet services that have never before been regulated. And second, although the draft includes a section on net neutrality or connectivity principles, and we commend you for that, we're concerned that it does not give adequate assurance to consumers and to Internet content and service providers that the marketplace, instead of Internet broadband access providers, will decide what content and services succeed or fail on the Internet. This concept of connectivity principles or net neutrality is not new, and it's the concept that helped fuel the Internet's growth to the benefit of network operators, content providers, and the public. It's not broken and doesn't need to be fixed, but it needs to be maintained in the broadband era. As you know, Microsoft provides a wide array of current and next-generation Internet offerings, including MSN for news and entertainment, Hotmail for free email, and our live meeting service, which enables businesses to communicate more effectively. And for gamers, we have Xbox Live, connecting gamers around the world when they play Xbox games. My group develops technologies for the delivery of video content. Microsoft TV Foundation Edition is currently being deployed by Comcast in Washington State, and we also develop the IP-based TV platform products that SBC will soon deploy as part of Project Lightspeed and that Verizon recently launched in Keller, Texas. Network operators are investing in infrastructure for the broadband future, but Microsoft and other Internet companies like Amazon.com, eBay, Google, Interactive Corp, and Yahoo are also investing billions to bring content and services to the public. And telecommunications carriers will be paid some of that money, too. These investments by companies on the ends of the network matter because consumers do not buy technology advances. They buy content and services. Congress should therefore adopt policies that encourage Internet content providers and service providers to bring new and evolving offerings to the public. In my earlier testimony, I set out goals that should guide any legislation to promote broadband Internet access and content, and they're as follows. The Internet services and products should remain largely unregulated. Consumers should be able to access any Internet site and use lawful application devices or content with broadband connections. And where they are subject to regulation, Internet and video services should be subject exclusively to federal regulation. So looking at the staff draft, how does it stack up against these goals? First, we recognize that what you're trying to do is incredibly difficult. We appreciate the complexity of these issues. But now, since many seem to agree that Internet services should remain largely unregulated, we believe that the definitions in the discussion draft reach broader than necessary. Services and products that ride atop broadband transport networks have never been subject to regulation before. In the definition of bits, however, the discussion draft could be interpreted to extend regulations to Internet services such as MSN, Hotmail, or Yahoo. These services have not been subject to regulation because they do not provide transport connection to consumers. We suggest the subcommittee revise the bits definition to apply only to entities that provide or resell facilities for accessing content and services on the Internet. We are also concerned that the definition of VoIP is broader than necessary. Click-to-call features which enable an outgoing call with a mouse click on a web page could be covered by the definition, even though they're not substitutes for a phone service and they're really only one-way services. Likewise, Xbox Live could be covered by the definition, even though it's not a substitute for telephone service either. We see no reason, and we think consumers see no reason, why Xbox Live or Live Meeting, which is a product to enable virtual office meetings, should have to offer E911 capabilities or shoulder other telephone-like burdens since they only provide voice services in a contained environment. Instead, we suggest that the VoIP definition should cover only those services that are genuine substitutes for traditional phone service, such as those using phone numbers and offering interconnected services for sending and receiving calls to and from the public switched telephone network. Finally, the concept of net neutrality or connectivity principles should remain a core value in the broadband Internet world. The consumer's ability to access any lawful content over dial-up connections motivated Internet companies to invest, innovate, and compete in the Internet marketplace to the benefit of everyone. These principles give consumers, not network operators, the power to determine which services and products will succeed or fail, and these enabling freedoms need to be maintained. We suggest two important improvements to the draft in this area. First, the preserved authority's language is ambiguous or overly broad and needs tightening in order to give the market adequate assurance. And second, we believe the section on the connectivity principles should apply to entities that provide or resell facilities for the transport of information and that provide a subscriber with Internet access or content derived from the Internet. The current definitions and provisions suggest that a company can both provide content from the Internet and not adhere to the connectivity principles. A company, of course, can choose to not include Internet content, in which case we think the connectivity principles should not apply. Thank you for the opportunity to appear again. You're undertaking important reforms, and I appreciate the opportunity to work with you on this legislation. I'm happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Ms. Prazer.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Upton, Mr. Markey, Chairman Barton, Mr. Dingell, and members of the committee. I especially want to thank my congressman, Congressman Wynn, for his kind introduction and comments. I look forward to continuing to work with you for our common constituents. For three decades, local governments have used cable franchising authority to achieve nearly universal deployment of broadband advanced services and to protect consumers within our authority. Let there be no mistake, local governments want competition as fast and as much as the market can sustain. While we do not believe that the local franchise process has impeded video competition, we have been prepared to explore different means of streamlining the process. However, we remain skeptical. Most recently in Texas, telcos were given what they wanted, fast-track franchising. But Verizon and SBC have to date offered to provide competitive choice to less than 1% of Texas households. Is the nation giving up current consumer protections and community benefits just to provide choice to a small percentage of the population? We continue to be concerned, as I know you are, about the digital divide. Local governments have come to the table in search of a legislative compromise. We remain clear about our broad parameters. Preserve universal service, E911, local emergency alerts, and the nation's homeland security. Protect our property rights and our authority for managing the nation's rights of way. Private, for-profit, and quasi-permanent occupancy of the most valuable real estate held by local government must be fairly compensated, both through social obligations to the community served and in rental fees. Preserve local government's right to provide broadband transport and communication services for itself and our constituents. Ensure that a local telco franchise is comparable in terms and conditions to a cable franchise, and provide for consumers' choice of broadband providers with guaranteed network neutrality. Local government organization staffs met with your collective council to craft a solution. The fruits of those labors was the first staff draft, or BITS 1. While not perfect, BITS 1 was a good start. It reflected a nonpartisan dialogue with all the parties at the table. It evidenced a respect for and agreement with many of the essential elements I cited. We were invited to assist in strengthening those areas where local government believed the staff draft had missed the mark. The revised staff draft, BITS 2, on the other hand, breaks faith with those deal points. The telephone companies to us appear to get everything they asked for, including fast-track franchising, while avoiding most social obligations. Public safety standards are determined by the industry without proper oversight. Local government is permitted only to enforce what the industry deems important. This is an inappropriate federal and private industry intrusion into the management of our streets and sidewalks. State and local government is not kept whole. BITS 2 limits rights-of-way fees to the recovery of management costs. Broadband video franchise fees are limited to 5% of subscriber revenue, not all video service-related revenues. So telcos not only get out from under franchising, they get subsidized use of local government's property. As a comparison, the federal government charges a full market price to use public spectrum. Community needs and interests are essentially abandoned. While cable must continue to provide local community needs and interests such as PEGs, INETs, and emergency alerts, the telcos do not. Consumers lose choice and competition, and there is no network neutrality. BITS rates would not even replicate the rental fees contained in the recent Texas franchising legislation. Needless to say, local government officials across the country are not pleased with the prospect of this bill moving forward as is. We welcome your introductory comments about the fact that this is a draft. We solicit the support of the bipartisan leadership and every member of this subcommittee for our efforts to protect your and our constituents. This bill, as it is currently worded, breaks faith with the promises we were made in exchange for our support for the national franchise solutions. We were promised consumer choice, fair competition, preservation of our rights-of-way authority, and keeping local governments whole. Without appropriate amendments, RITS 2, as I said, breaks faith with those commitments and breaks faith with our consumers. We stand ready, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, to continue to negotiate on appropriate legislation prior to markup. We will come back to the table this afternoon. We will stay and work with you through the Christmas recess, if necessary, to achieve the result that we all want. Quality, universal service for everyone, all consumers within our jurisdictions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Vitala.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman Upton. Chairman,
I think
you've
got to hit that button.
Is that better?
That's better.
Thank you, Chairman Upton, Chairman Barton, Ranking Member Markey, members of the subcommittee. Earthlink is the nation's largest independent Internet service provider, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify today. At the outset, let me say that the staff discussion draft takes, in our view, steps towards an appropriate regulatory framework for broadband communications. However, the draft also takes some half steps that should be improved, as well as some missteps that should be reversed. Earthlink's comments on the discussion draft focus on three key goals. Goal one, keeping the consumer's ability to choose his or her service providers foremost in mind. The draft wisely includes provisions to ensure that broadband transmission providers do not interfere with a customer's lawful use of the Internet, the net neutrality provisions. The threat of Internet discrimination is a real and present danger to consumers. A recent report from CIBC, a respected investment bank, goes so far as recommending to telco and cable companies a top 10 list of anti-competitive network discrimination techniques. Given that threat, we believe the current draft should be improved. For example, making it clearer that while different speeds and different pricing of Internet service can be offered to all consumers to accomplish network management, but once a consumer has purchased the right to use the express lane, they should be able to use that express lane for all applications, not just those applications their BITS provider would prefer. Network owners must not be allowed to favor their own customers, their own applications, once folks are in their express lanes. Another way to ensure that the consumer is in charge is by adding a provision for standalone broadband, known in less polite circles as naked DSL. Too many consumers are forced to buy regular voice phone service when they buy DSL service. Why should a consumer who wants to use VoIP instead of traditional phone service have to spend $25 to $50 a month for phone service she doesn't want in order to get broadband service? The staff draft should be modified by adding a new provision to guarantee that consumers have the option of purchasing standalone broadband without being forced to buy regular phone service. I agree with Mr. Ellis about following the wireless success. Over the past decade, this committee has time and again gotten it right when facing issues relating to the wireless industry. 10 years ago, wireless was a duopoly, but this committee took actions to encourage new facilities, protect interconnection rights, and give the wireless industry reasonable time to comply with a host of government mandates. We are rewarded with a vibrant, competitive wireless marketplace. We are pleased to note that the staff draft takes an important step to encourage new broadband facilities by eliminating current and future prohibitions on municipal broadband initiatives. Earthlink is proud to be leading the effort to unwire America's cities with Wi-Fi technology, delivering the Internet wirelessly and affordably. Earthlink has already partnered with the City of Philadelphia to build, own, and manage, at our cost, a wireless network to provide broadband to the entire 135 square miles of Philadelphia. This will be the nation's largest municipal Wi-Fi network. Powered by the equivalent of just 600 light bulbs, 135 square miles will be lit by the promise of affordable broadband access. The wireless example also highlights an important misstep relating to the lack of protections guaranteeing interconnection and traffic exchange. 10 years ago, wireless faced the same situation internet voice traffic does today. Relatively few folks on a wireless network trying to get connected to lots of folks on the incumbent telephone company's network. Recognizing their advantage, the phone companies often required wireless to pay for calls into their network and for calls from their network. In other words, heads I win, tails you lose for the incumbent because wireless had no negotiating leverage. Fortunately, Congress took significant steps in 1993 and 1996 that recognized that given such a disproportionate market power, a small network was never going to have even the chance to become a big network. Unfortunately, the staff draft does too little to address this practical problem. While a requirement to interconnect is included, there is no meaningful enforcement. FCC arbitration is possible, but with no criteria or standards to find anti-competitive behavior. We regret that the staff draft has a major shortfall in this respect, and we urge that it be corrected. Let me close with the third goal, a plea for a regulatory timeout. Over the past 3 years, telecom rules have been in a constant state of flux. The staff draft remains largely silent on the old debates of the past decade. I ask the subcommittee to take a modest additional step, a step to an affirmative timeout. The FCC has identified a clear investment-based path to full deregulation. If an ILEC builds fiber to even 500 feet of a customer's home or business, they are entirely free of any loop unbundling obligation. Congress should call a lengthy timeout against further piecemeal litigation over loop unbundling, allowing Earthlink and others to make investment decisions based on what's happening in the marketplace, not what's happening in regulators' offices. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We look forward to your questions.
Thank you. Mr. Rayberger.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Upton.
You need to hit that mic button as well.
Good morning, Chairman Upton, Chairman Barton, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me here today. Today I'm testifying on behalf of XO Communication. We're the largest competitive CLEC in the U.S. today, and Comtel, the Competitive Communications Industry Trade Association, of which XO is a board member. I ask that Comtel's analysis of the staff draft, which is included in my written statement, be included as part of the record. For decades, it's been the innovation of entrepreneurial companies coupled with market opening regulations, cost-based compensation for network access that have brought choice, lower prices, and new technologies and services to the customer. If we look back a little bit, we know that the Bell companies had DSL technology years before the 1996 Telecom Act, but they never deployed that technology until COVID aggressively deployed it. Until recently, the Bells had no incentive to offer VoIP technology until Vonage paved the way in the consumer market and companies like XO offered VoIP products to business customers. As I mentioned in my written statement, there appears to be several mistaken assumptions underlying the draft legislation related to telecom. First, the draft seems to imply that packet-switched internet and circuit-switch network, or PSTN, and networks are physically separate networks. Consider the following. In your home today, there is a wall jack that connects the PSTN, providing plain old telephone service to you. If you plug your computer into that same jack, you have dial-up internet access. And if you plug a digital subscriber line modem into that very same jack, you can have high-speed internet access. That high-speed internet access also allows you to get voice over the internet protocol or VoIP calls in the exact same wall jack. Nothing has changed except for the electronics that are attached to the wall jack and the wires. However, under this draft, regulations will differ based on the use of packet or circuit switching. In particular, Section 105 appears to protect the competitor's access to unbundled network elements and co-locations, but it seems to restrict such rights to only the circuit switch world. Furthermore, a telecommunications service qualifies for this protection, possibly meaning that only the provision of circuit switch voice would qualify. It's not clear how innovative companies who operate one integrated network and provide both services would be able to comply with two different regulatory regimes. The second assumption is that voluntary commercial negotiations for interconnection under Section 103 of the draft will provide access to the incumbents' networks at rates and terms that will continue to foster competition and innovation. Decades of telecommunication history have proven otherwise. Without the backstop of the 1996 Act, which requires that interconnection be on just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory terms and conditions, provides effective enforcement mechanism, commercial agreements alone would not have provided a viable option for competitors. To compete, XO and other competitors have been building fiber rings in the metro areas to carry traffic that's aggregated from numerous business customers, and we also build long-distance networks to carry aggregated traffic between metropolitan areas. But in the business market, it is a fact that fewer than 10% of the office buildings in the U.S. have alternative fiber connected to them. Instead, for over 90% of the buildings and those customers, the incumbents and competitors alike use the connection to the building that is owned by the ILEC. Speaking from XO's own experience, I can assure the committee members that where the FCC has granted relief of certain interconnection requirements or access to unbundled network elements, on many occasions, the Bell companies have either refused to negotiate for use of their networks, imposed conditions that have driven up customer prices, or have made it uneconomical for us to compete. In some instances, XO may be able to negotiate marginally better terms given the size, given our size and scale, but that won't be the case for the hundreds of other competitors who are smaller than we are. My final point to the committee is that the staff draft would carve out the telecommunications industry as the only networked industry in America that does not operate under some form of highly regulated network sharing. Competing electricity providers share transmission access. Competing rail providers share rail access, and competing natural gas suppliers share pipelines. In fact, the network sharing rules embodied in the 1996 Act have benefited the telecommunications industry for over 10 years. They are the reason we continue to experience the industry innovations and customer choice we have today. Why should we all of a sudden treat the telecommunications industry different based on the next popular technology? Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to appear before the subcommittee today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Salas.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the subcommittee.
You need to hit that button as well, mic button. No. Is it not working?
Sorry. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the subcommittee. Thank you for holding this hearing today. I am Edward Salas, Vice President of Network Planning for Verizon Wireless. I am responsible for network strategy, planning, purchasing, and administration. I am here representing Verizon Wireless. Verizon Wireless thanks you and your colleagues for the time and effort put forth in working to craft legislation that updates our nation's telecommunications laws. We also appreciate the attention that you gave to the concerns raised by Verizon Wireless on the first draft. Specifically, we applaud your efforts in streamlining the far-reaching national consumer standards, welcome the progress towards improved net neutrality provisions, and appreciate changes to the FCC's role. We believe that these revisions were clearly a step in the right direction, and it is Verizon Wireless's hope that as the committee continues its drafting process, consensus is reached on a bill that fosters competition, removes unnecessary government regulation, and allows a deregulated market to bring benefits to consumers. The wireless industry has been a critical driver of the national economy, generating tens of millions of new jobs, building new communications infrastructure, and serving more than 190 million Americans. With certain modifications, the draft bill can lead to even more benefits to consumers and the economy. Today I will share with you some of our principal concerns. I hope that we will have the opportunity to share with you some additional concerns and suggestions as your legislative efforts continue. One, Verizon Wireless is making major investments in broadband wireless technology. Verizon Wireless is a firm believer in the broadband future. We were the first company to roll out what we consider real 3G services, and we are leading the industry in broadband deployment. We first deployed our EVDO service in October 2003 in San Diego and Washington, D.C. We have invested well over $1 billion in expanding our EVDO offering to encompass more than 170 major metropolitan markets and 84 major airports across the nation. And we will continue to expand the customer's ability to access this amazing technology. Two, wireless broadband relies on IP technologies and leverages our circuit switch technology as well. For voice and narrowband data, our network operates over traditional circuit switch facilities. Our EVDO broadband service is fundamentally an IP-based technology working over a standard non-IP air interface. But all of our EVDO-based devices have a circuit switch capability to support all of our basic voice and legacy services. Many of our competitors also deliver their services over a single integrated wireless network, seamlessly weaving high-speed and lower-speed capabilities, as well as packet and circuit switch technologies. Three, the draft bill maintains the old silo approach for new technology. Verizon Wireless agrees that IP-enabled services are the platforms of the immediate telecommunications future. On the other hand, the draft bill is structured along the lines of the regulatory model for landline services that has been in place for decades. Consumers don't know or care whether the wireless services they buy are deployed over a packet technology or a circuit switch one. They simply want the services, and they want them to perform reliably. Attempting to regulate such packet switch digital services and applications in silo-like regimes where services provided over a single platform may be regulated and taxed differently will create an administrative and regulatory nightmare. Four, the draft bill does not expressly encompass mobile wireless services. Verizon Wireless is also concerned that the bill could be read to omit wireless altogether from the landmark deregulatory approach that would apply to bits providers. The draft bill appears to require that a bits provider must use a packet switch transmission service. As I noted earlier, Verizon Wireless and other wireless companies currently provide broadband service over an integrated platform of both packet and circuit switch technologies. The two cannot be segregated. It is time to remove the regulation for wireless packet technology. Why should the analysis differ merely because the broadband technology at some times and in some places may rely on a hybrid circuit switch packet technology? If the committee agrees, the simplest path to that result is to modify the definitions of bits provider to include all services that are offered in conjunction with bits. Five, the net neutrality provisions should recognize the uniqueness of wireless services. We do have some concerns about the net neutrality or access to bits in Section 104 of the draft legislation because they do not appear to acknowledge the critical technology distinctions between wireline and wireless networks. The air interface on a wireless network is significantly more bandwidth limited than wireline's dedicated fiber optic or copper facilities and must be shared by all users in a defined geographic area. Network performance and resource availability in the wireless environment is thus much more sensitive to variations in usage than a wireline network. In order for us to ensure the integrity and reliability of our network and to provide consumers with the best available online experience, we cannot support unrestricted access to the Internet for downloading any and all applications or the connection of devices not approved for use on our network. Verizon Wireless does not block customers from accessing the Internet as long as they are lawful and not associated with any security or misuse risk. We believe we must control the amount of resources that any individual customer can demand from our network. The draft legislation is right to preserve the bits provider's authority to protect the security and reliability of its network and broadband transmission services, but it is not clear how this authority will be reconciled with the provider's duty not to block access to any lawful content, application, or service provided over the Internet, and to permit subscribers to connect and use devices of their choosing. At least in the wireless environment, the device is, in fact, an extension of the network. Six, Congress should make clear that wireless is to be subject to federal regulation. While it is clear that we are trying to achieve the same result of a national deregulatory framework, it is our belief that we may be subject to an entirely new, uncertain, complex re-regulatory regime. It would retreat from and reverse the deregulation that has so served the nation's economy and wireless customers. Now more than ever, states are attempting to reassert utility-type regulation over the wireless industry. Ironically, at the same time, the industry has been deploying national networks, offering national rate
plans that offer unparalleled benefits for consumers. States threaten to undermine these benefits by imposing a patchwork of burdensome and inconsistent rules. Congress can simultaneously recognize the benefits of competition and prevent the harmful impacts of state-by-state regulation of a national industry by completing the deregulation began in 1993. The federal government is in the best position to oversee this national industry, which serves the public across and without regard to state lines. In conclusion, the committee took the first step in 1993. You have a unique opportunity to build upon that success. Verizon Wireless hopes that as your legislative process continues, you keep in mind the technical complexities of the wireless network and allow us the freedom to maintain our network resources and the ability to secure our network. We look forward to working with you in this process.
Thank you. You're going to hear the buzzers ring here in a second. We're about ready to have three votes. So I think at this time, that's right. I think we're going to take a short recess and we'll come back at 12:35. We'll begin with Mr. Wilner at 12:35.
Thank you.